The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Welcome once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have Charlie Saladino sitting next to me.
How you doing, everybody?
A balding Charlie Saladino.
Yes, St. Baldrick's Day. Yay.
And I have Hassan Godwin back in the studio, and Hermes Snurch is not here.
They were never in the same place twice.
What did you do with him?
I didn't do anything with him. We're the same person.
You merged somewhere along the way.
I turned into Hassan on the way here because I decided I didn't want to be Herman when I got here.
So if anybody is having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on live audio streaming. Also on the GBB site, you can see us on the webcam. You can actually see Charlie and his new hairdo when he was talking about St. Baldrick's Day, which was posted on the Facebook.
I'll rub my head in 10 seconds.
There you go.
Okay.
And as always, we always have Tom Ross helping us out behind the
Dr. Tom Ross.
Dr. Tom Ross, yes. And the phone number here is area code 631-888-8811.
What's in the news, Mark?
All right.
That's why we don't get any phone calls.
It was a prompt.
Shooting on Men in Black Part 3 has been delayed because Will Smith wants to see some changes in the script. For those of you that
Smith
don't know,
he was the king of everything, and that he's living with two foreign stars now, and that he's got Charlie Sheen disease. He's gone nuts.
For those of you that don't know, the story behind Men in Black 3 has Agent J, Will Smith's character, to go back in time to 1969, where he encounters famous figures of the day like Yoko Ono, as well as the younger version of Agent K, played by Josh Brolin in the younger version. The original script got the green light, and filming had already begun this past November.
Wait a minute, does that mean Tommy Lee Jones is not in the third
Tommy
movie?
Lee Jones is in it, but when he goes back in time, he runs into Josh Brolin.
Okay.
Filming had begun in past November, and they shot the first act, and they were going to have a break set over the holidays. That was the plan. But the executives figured that they would work out the story problems during the break and resume the schedule. A former Sony exec says, if Will wasn't satisfied with the script after all the years it's been in development, how do they expect to get it fixed by Christmas? Other sources say that any movie involving time travel seems to be difficult, and if you want to make it work, you would have and have no BS loopholes, which would have taken longer than I thought it would. And it's hard because now that we've already filmed one third of the movie, they are kind of set into a stone of where the direction of the movie is going. And they hired writer David Koepp, who did uncredited work on the first Men in Black, to do revisions. So hopefully they'll get this on track so it'll be out in time.
See, the bad part was they're into the script already, because then you got to worry about the continuity.
Yeah.
You got to worry, what did I do before? Is that going to screw up what I'm doing now?
Yeah.
So that's not a good thing.
What's worse than that, though, is that they're making the third Men in Black.
Yeah, right now it's starting to reek like manufactured by committee disease.
So now they
hack. That's what it is.
Well, maybe, you know, Will Smith at the helm, I guess. If he's not happy with it, that means he has script approval or final say now. He's so popular and so powerful now.
Yes.
That's just going to be interesting. But
it's funny that Tommy Lee Jones doesn't chime in at all.
Yeah, he just shows up, does his job, and goes
home. You know why? He's getting paid. He's a smart man. He's getting a check, and he's getting a lot of days off.
That's right. They do get a per diem.
There you go. He's a smart man.
Yes, he's just sitting back and cashing that check in every week.
Mm-hmm. That's what I would do.
Plus, in the press, he's not made out to be the person who's gumming up the works.
Yep, he's not the not the problematic one.
So, if all goes well and this gets done on time, the Men in Black will be in 3D on May 25th, 2012. So,
what about Hancock too?
That was the. That was, but and he, but
it's
he didn't
be a
have a.
Too. They were talking about it, and there's
really?
Also yeah. Well, they've talked about it, and it's also a believe it or not, I Am Legend 2.
Yeah, that one I heard about. It was going to be a prequel because, you know.
Yeah, but then they said they wanted to make a direct sequel instead of a prequel because prequels are stupid. And then they said they want to make a prequel because the sequel would be stupid because they killed him off. And then they said they want to make a sequel because no one goes to see prequels anymore.
So they're back and forth.
Yes.
And the word goes round
exactly.
and round.
But it's going to happen.
Okay.
It'll be out Christmas around the time, same time as Men in Black.
There's a mountain of money to be made.
There you go.
Speaking of a mountain of money to be made.
Mr. Segway.
Mountain of money to be made.
It seems that Mars needs
you can't step on it when I sing. Oh. You know?
You know, it's very rare that he does that.
Yeah, I mean, you stepped all over it.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm not doing it anymore. Go ahead. Okay.
It seems that Mars needs Mars.
I blame you.
Mars needs money, right? It's not
yeah,
doing that well.
Mars doesn't need Seth Green's voice. That's what they don't need.
It actually is now officially the 12th worst opening of all time for a movie release in more than 3,000 theaters. So it's one of the biggest flops as of right now.
Wow.
In the theaters. And it might go down as the biggest flop of all time.
Is that a Disney project?
Of all time.
It is, yeah.
That's a Disney project?
It is a Disney project.
I feel so bad for them.
It's the biggest flop of all time for Disney or
no,
of all time?
All time.
I can't be.
The biggest flop you know, of a major release would be Cutthroat Island. It has the biggest...
really?
It's in the Guinness Book of World Records as the biggest flop because of the amount of money it made and lost.
Well, you know what?
I thought that Stealth was the biggest flop because they've panned Stealth as like the worst movie ever made. I've heard that. I have no facts to corroborate that story, but I've read that it was. I didn't believe it either. I thought Cool as Ice was the worst because I think that movie made $600 when it came out.
I remember Cool as Ice going to the theater. I saw it one day
and Get with the Hero,
and the next day it was gone. It really was.
Did you see it in the theater?
I didn't know. I walked past
the
theater
saw
it. I was like, hey, Cool as Ice. I didn't know that movie came out. And the next day, it was gone.
I
literally
heard
it made
like $6,000, something ridiculous.
And the day,
like
the day after that, it was in the stores. Yeah. But what was the thing? They should have kept Seth Green's voice. They said it was too mature.
Yeah, that was the next
And they
next
took
bit
it out the last minute.
Yeah, that was the next
so,
bit of news.
So, good move, Disney.
So
you know.
Whose voice did they replace him with?
An 11-year-old Seth Dusky came in.
Oh, they kept the Seth part, though.
Well, yeah. I guess they...
His name was really John, but they said you'll be famous.
Too many of the title cards.
Yeah.
Seth.
I actually saw the thing. Admittedly, it was no great film, to put it mildly, but it wasn't a stinker either. You know, it was like a typical kid's film.
Well, no one's interested right now, I guess.
Yeah, probably because it came out so soon after Rango, which everyone is saying is something of a masterpiece.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I've seen
there is so
and
much
they kept
blame.
Johnny Depp's voice.
Yes, there's so much blame to go around. I mean, it goes anywhere from they're saying that the 3D process wasn't that good, that the animation itself looked kind of quote-unquote creepy. They're blaming that the title shouldn't have had the word mom in it because it shied away young boys from going into the target audience.
Coming up and saying that the 3D was no good and they wanted their money back or free popcorn or something like that. The movie
they wanted free popcorn.
Yeah.
I saw it in plain old 2D, and truthfully, I think they would have been better off just leaving it that way.
2D? What's the matter with you, Tom?
Yeah, incidentally, you know where they got the name from.
Yeah, Mars Needs Women.
Right.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, these are all reasons why they're saying it wasn't good. They also blame the same way that came out, the Battle LA took their audience away. So there's blame.
Yeah, right. Battle because LA. The same audience that was going to see Battle L.A. or whatever is going to go see
Moms. I can't go see Moms. Mars Needs Moms. I got to go see Battle L.A.
Yeah.
It's a shame that they came out the same time I might have spent the money
same
on.
Target audience. Way to go.
And they said that they actually were based on – they knew it was going to be bad.
Is it Disney Pixar?
No.
This is
actual Disney's
animation
company? It's a company. He made a company when he did the train movie. Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I forget. The Midnight Express or something. Something weird like that.
And Disney bought the company, and then they came up with The Christmas Carol.
Okay. They also did Beowulf, didn't they? Or I know Robert Zemeckis directed that. I don't know if they...
That might have been his company also. but now Disney bought that company in hopes of making a big bag of money.
Well,
and
well they started off with a bang.
You consume other companies to monopolize, and then you sometimes you get a flop. You got to deal with it.
Heads will roll for this.
Well, that's this why.
Heads will always roll at Disney. It's a nightmare over there, even though they put out happy, fluffy cartoons. Yeah. So naturally, it's kind of morose and.
It also says
me when you go in that place.
It also says here that another that they had actually knew it wasn't going to be a
it
good
says
movie.
There, what is there?
Well, on I'm sorry, on my
this just in.
This just in. don't read this out loud. Oh no,
from the Desmond Mark Torres.
Yes, from Desmond Mark Torres. This just in. Don't read this out loud. You're an idiot. they actually said that when they gave the screenings, the special screenings way before, and they
of Marsney's Moms, right?
They said they knew it wasn't going to be a hit.
Really?
But they expected it to be, you know, at least $10 to $20 million.
They expected to fool people because of the animation and the kitty aspect. But Rango had just come out. They shouldn't have put it out so close to Rango.
That's just dumb.
That's just dumb.
That's just stupid.
Well, so
why would you do that?
That's the final say on Disney. They're just stupid. They're stupid.
No, that decision was stupid.
Oh, to put it out.
Say Disney was stupid. Okay. Don't have me followed home by
the mouse
black SUVs with big mouse ears.
The killer
on
mouse.
You've seen them.
No comment. Not going to make any comment.
All right. So speaking of stupid ideas.
Mr. Segway. You stepped on him. It's done. That's it.
I was waiting this time.
No.
Bono. The music legend that is has taken over Spider-Man. Turn off the dark.
He's as a director.
He has. Well, you remember it was his a collaboration between him and Julie Taymor.
Yeah. She left, didn't she?
Well,
she was asked to leave.
Yes. Bono took a last-ditch effort to salvage the production by replacing the co-writer Julie Taymor with Philip William McKinley, who staged the production Boy from Oz with Hugh Jackman, as well as circus productions for Barnum and Bailey. Also joining the show is Spider-Man comic book writer Roberto, I'm going to mess up his name, Aguirre Sacasa, S-A-C-A-S-A. He's a Spider-Man writer. They brought him in to help out to rewrite the script. And reportedly, Bono is going to, quote, rip the show apart from top to bottom, starting from scratch, unquote. So they're going to redo the whole
thing. Can we get, like, a detailed report of what her problem was? Or, like, all right, not in the sense of what was her problem, how come she couldn't get it right, but what exactly was she doing that was wrong that was helping the production not to get on its feet?
From what I understand, and actually I have this one for follow-up question.
Oh, I thought I stumped him.
No. From what I understand, excluding the acrobatics and the technical problems, they say the second act of the story itself wasn't that good. It was lacking.
Okay, so the story was...
Right, the story was lacking. And anytime anybody had the reviews, it was always negative. And Julie was like, this production is ready to go. It's going to be ready for the 15th. No matter what, so she just kept on going forward, ignoring everybody else was saying.
She was probably under the strain of the backers, though.
Yeah.
You know, the financial wing of that production was probably pushing her to make sure that it came out on the release date. So,
right.
I mean, now that the press has been so bad, now the backers have now invested in a flop, which allows Bono to come in and look like a hero by pushing it back. But before you have such a – it's like the springtime for Hitler in Germany. Before you have such a calamitous
mess?
Well, yeah. Before that all goes public, the backers were probably screaming at her to make sure it just comes out on time. So that was her press, you know, that was her spin, spin on it. It'll come out on time, you know. She never said it was going to be good. I'm not defending her because I don't know.
Right.
Maybe she was a boob, you know. But I mean, I'm just saying it's ridiculous now.
The Lord give it and the Lord
take
it
away. Here's the thing. If you have if someone says, oh, it's coming out no matter what, and the only complaint about a person is that she wasn't rewriting the second act, You know, while you got people falling off the rafters and other things, then there's more to it than, you know, just steaming ahead, you know? It's not like they said, okay, look, these wires are not holding people up, you know? We shouldn't use twine. We should use real bungee cords. And she's like,
band.
No, that's out of the budget, you know? I want you to, it's not like they
would cost $66 million to replace all the rubber bands with you know, metal wires.
With real, yeah, steel.
Come on, he's a light guy. Look at him.
Yeah.
It's cheaper to pay the OSHA fines.
Yeah.
And there's always another stuntman where the last one came
Where's
from.
The understudy?
Just get some more futon mattresses and we'll be fine.
The understudy, yeah. There's a line outside the door.
You could have crowd participation like Gallagher and have everybody hold their own mattress. So when Spider-Man goes overhead, maybe if you catch Spider-Man, you get another free show.
You can't get like a baseball. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the advantage of a cast that's expendable.
You can get a free catch an actor, win a free prize.
You get a,
that's
free,
how I would have saved the production.
You get a
that's
free
what,
web.
Yeah, you get something chintzy too, right?
It's like
Pez.
I got,
you get Spider-Man Pez.
Yeah.
They should have went with win a date with the actors.
Yo-yo.
One of the actors if you catch them.
No, that always backfires because, you know, the female quality of the show is always better than the male quality. So, the dudes win, chicks lose. So there'd be dudes falling all over themselves to catch Spider-Man.
Yeah. See, and it's in New York. They'll be trying to cut the wire to catch Spider-Man.
I was going
to
say that. Yeah.
I've heard of a movie theater where there were mice falling from the ceiling, but this beats all.
Oh, yeah.
So
that would have been a thrill for me.
Yeah.
So before they, you know, shut down production, do a major overhaul, do all this stuff, another aerial stunt went awry last week.
Oh, my God.
You've got to be kidding me.
How come... Okay.
What a
okay,
shocker.
Wait. How come Sandy Duncan could do this?
Way back when.
How come? Wait.
25 years ago.
Never. I'll go further. How come Mary Martin
that's
do it?
That's why I couldn't remember her name. But that's why I went to Sandy Duncan. How come she could do this? How could they Mary Martin did it almost 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
What's the problem?
You know what the problem is?
Do you know what the problem is? They keep firing the directors and not the prop masters. That's what the problem is.
No, I think the problem is that you know how it's considered bad luck in the theater community to mention what we shall refer to as the Scottish play. I think a new superstition is going to soon arise. It's bad luck to discuss a play about a certain superhero.
It's bad luck to strap a bungee cord on in the middle of in the middle of a playhouse.
What I want to see is a new movie about the future, maybe in 2025. And a family sitting at the table, and the father's reading paper, and he says, "Oh, they delayed Spider-Man again."
What was that? What was that bug? That was a Looney Tunes cartoon about Bing Crosby horse that it never came in because it was so slow, and that was a joke for years that it took forever that he was a horse racer, and it was in a Looney Tunes cartoon. And it was in the future, and Bugs Bunny opened the paper and said, "Bing Crosby horse has not reached the finish yet." So I guess that's just one of those things that you just
What are they? Okay, are they grabbing Spider-Man and then pulling him back and then slingshotting him into the? I mean,
it has to be like the wire work in like the Charlie's Angels and the Kung Fu flicks. You know, they have like eight guys pulling rigs and stuff, and they're going up and down. And,
well obviously, they got to get eight guys with meat on their bones.
And also, there's mechanical.
Or a Spider-Man with a little less meat on his bones.
Well, I've seen the guy. I mean, I'm sure that the three of us here could propel him through the studio here.
And, of course, they also have the mechanical winches that swing him from side to side
this
as well.
This is 2011. How come you can't come up with a winch that can hold up Spider-Man? You can't make Spider-Man fly in a play in 2011?
Well, this is exactly what...
They made Christopher Reeve fly. In 1979.
Well, this is what happened with the mechanical winch. Green Goblin was soaring over the audience.
No, and Spider-Man!
It stopped. He stopped midway and above the audience because his steering mechanism failed,
and
leaving him dangling above the audience.
Curses!
Spider-Man!
And was he spinning around though? Oh, isn't this magical?
Isn't this magical?
Get me out of here! I'll get you next time, Spider-Man.
You and your little cable.
As soon as this winch works again.
Yeah.
Whoops! I'm getting hazard pay for this.
Yeah.
Forget about getting a new producer. This show needs an exorcist.
Well, yeah. But this show needs to just be a comedy. It'll be a hit if it was a comedy.
A comedy about how they can't make Spider-Man fly. Wow.
So
Spider-Man, open the slapstick. You know.
Speaking of making it into a comedy.
Mr. Segway.
Speaking of making it into a comedy.
Yep. This past Monday.
Oh, my God. What's going to happen now?
Another smaller Spider musical premiered and closed. It was a one-day show only at the People's Improv Theater in New York City.
Spider-Man?
A Spider musical. Another
musical. Okay, it's a musical about a spider.
No, it's a Spider-Man, but it's a parody because, you know, the rest they get
a parody
sued.
Of, yeah.
It was called The Spider Project. Great power comes great responsibility. According to comedian Jesse Moran, the goal of the project was to put together a fully realized musical based on Spider-Man in under 30 days with no budget and to do what should have been done in the first place, which is to make a really good musical. Tickets for the musical were sold out as of March 14th deadline approached. Before the deadline approached, the tickets were sold out.
No way.
And all the reviews were positive.
Wow.
For more information on the first and best Spider-Man play to go into Manhattan officially, because it officially opened and closed, it's www.thespideyproject.blogspot.com.
Wow.
Wow.
So, amazing. And Kevin Smith was heard about it. He made a big thing, and that's how he got the news, and they did it. All improv, you know, the actors, no budget at all. And it came out one day. You know, they did two shows. That's how important it was. They only do it for one show. It turned into two shows.
But the important thing is it opened.
It leads me to believe that there were too many chefs for Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Yeah.
And whereas she takes responsibility because she's the director and she's the one who puts it together, and that's just the nature of the beast. I bet you there were way too many. Either she was completely incompetent and they didn't fire her in time, or she was trying to do the best she could. With 50 other people from behind the scenes telling her,
you know,
how to make the play better.
Yeah, that's by being written by a committee, like I said before. Yeah.
You know, once they hit $30 million, I think the problem's just like...
A $30 million dollar play doesn't even make sense to me. Like, you know, that doesn't... That's higher than like some major motion pictures. Like a major motion picture comedy with a superstar in it. Will cost less than $30 million.
Was it District 9 was like $18 million, wasn't it? It was a very low budget
I don't
film.
Understand how you can't do a play with people, you know, on slingshots being catapulted into the audience, you know? I just don't get it.
I think that's the problem because they're being catapulted into the
give
audience.
Give everybody a futon.
Rent the cannon from Ringling Brothers and Barnum Bay Lake Circus.
Or catapult them into the audience and say it's 3D without the glasses. There you
the
go.
First 3D Spider-Man Broadway play.
Wow.
It's in 3D. No, it's live.
Hire a bunch of professional wrestlers who specialize in throwing their opponents out of the ring.
get the fake chairs and
everything's a cage match. Spider-Man cage match.
So, you know, the thing is, with the Spider-Man, the tickets are doing well. You know, people are still going to see it. They're paying their money.
Because they want to see somebody fall.
The same people who would pay to see a execution on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same sickos.
Everyone likes to watch a train wreck.
Yeah, they want to see something bad happen.
No, I'm sure they came home the other day and said, oh, man, the Green Goblin just stopped.
Yeah,
he didn't fall.
He
couldn't turn. What a
play?
Jip.
It was terrible. The guy just went across the, you know, went across the stage and he landed and he walked away and then he sang something and then he, you know, he smacked Spider-Man and then he left.
What's
nobody
with the
fell,
landing
nothing
part?
Caught
yeah.
fire. Nobody died. No one was screaming in the background.
Well, golly, let's go watch some NASCAR. Maybe it'll be a big fiery crash.
Yeah.
Let's go to a baseball game. Maybe someone will get crowned with a ball.
I have to say that as this is going further and further, I am starting to become curious. You know, I won't go all the way out to Manhattan to see it, but I would like
to. It's $100 just to see a play that's incomplete. $150, I think. The price is ridiculous.
And then you may see it, and then it may be a total different play when it comes
out. It's a money pit. It's $150 to see a play that's not even completed yet.
Right.
And $30 million to do the play. I don't understand. And
$65 million.
$65 million. And the shows are – the rehearsals are still sold out. And the backers are still complaining that they're, you know, they're spending way too much money on it. It's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. It's just, it's a play. Plays are, if plays are going to get to the point where they're supposed to open like weekend movies, then that's the end of the arts. The arts is over. You know, the performance arts is over, because if they're going to stop putting that kind of pressure on it, that's why that other play, the parody play, is so important. Because a $30 million play, I'm sorry, I don't know a lot about it. I'm probably talking out the other end. A $30 million play or $65 million play makes no sense to me. It absolutely makes no sense. I can see a play over the course of a few months to a few years generating revenues upwards of $65 million or so. But costing that much before it even opens, is without any stars... There's no celebrities.
The closest thing they had was
the girl from Descent.
And she said, "Thank you."
And she
said, she took off. She's like, "Oh, that's too much for me. See you later."
She said, "The minute that guy fell in the orchestra pit, like, check."
Yeah, yeah.
I'll make the character the star.
Yeah, but where'd the money go?
Maybe it was.
Where did the money go?
The awesome costume.
Here's the thing.
The widows and the orphans.
I don't know about Mary Martin. Yeah, exactly. The HMO proceeds.
Right.
I don't know about Mary Martin, but I know for a fact they have the Sandy Duncan one on VHS somewhere. Just watch that tape and figure out what was done. Because to my knowledge, she never fell broken.
She never
broke a pelvis or a hip bone. Or, you know, it never. It was. She flew. Look at me, way up high.
I'll go one better than the Sandy Duncan. Go get an old tape of the live broadcast of Peter Pan with Mary Martin.
Mary Martin, yeah, I was just going to say
live,
that.
Live. They did everything live. And that made it all the way through.
Yeah, and wasn't there also a musical play about Superman back in the late 60s that actually worked fairly well and had a lot of... I even remember one of the songs of it, the Superman singing to Lois Lane, I hear you now, though you're all the way in France.
Well, we did actually mention when Jessica Rothman was a guest, she actually mentioned about that. Because did a little research about there was a Superman play, but it didn't make, you know, a big amount of money, but it was one of the most profitable comic book related plays out there.
Okay. So
actually, you know what? One of the problems might be with the flying, and all the examples we've been giving with Mary Martin and Sandy Duncan and the Superman play, all the flying took place over the stage. Mm-hmm. Now, I think what they're trying to do with this Spider-Man business is they're trying to actually fly him over the audience, which might be an entirely different bag of tricks.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. No, Tommy Lee used to have that problem with the Motley Crue. Used to do a thing where he used to get a drum solo on a gantry, and the drums used to spin upside down over and over while he played, which is very impressive. But he said a couple of times it got stuck. He was just stuck upside down and had to do the rest of the set upside down. And he said, you know, a couple of those nights he wondered what the point was. So I guess things do go wrong.
Well,
oh yeah, as a matter of fact, one of the only times a wrestler was actually killed in the ring, it was a guy named Hart, who I understand was a very nice guy if you ever had the opportunity to know him. And he was killed while being lowered onto the stage by a rig. The rig broke, and down he went, and he landed on his head on pay-per-view and died literally in front of the audience.
Yeah, I
remember that. So,
but the problem with the play right away that this layman could see is people can't fly.
Really? Are you sure
people
about that?
People cannot fly, and they're trying their best to do the most acrobatic, amazing things to have these people people who can fly. Opposed to people who can, right? People who can't fly, flying over the audience. This is a problem.
Yeah.
With that, actually, we're at a halfway point, so we're going to take our break and be right back. We came from the radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Bound to the bound. waiting all alone for my girl. Went up to me, came a flying saucer with people from another world, and I hollered, save me,
baby.
My feet. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do when a monster said,
"Which way to Fifth Avenue?"
I hollered, "Save me!
Save me.
Oh, save me!
Save me!
Oh, save me! Yeah, save me from the people from another world." Well, I shot down a plane and took my way upstairs, fell in on my knees. My friend, the rich jumped up and began to scream.
The motherfucker came to the window scream.
I hollered, save me.
Wow, that was hot. Now back to our show.
And we are back with Cameron Ray. I'm jumping over everybody today.
Terrible at this.
Happy holiday.
So this week. Oh, man. This week, we're going to be talking about the movie Battlefield L.A. I keep on wanting to say Battlefield L.A.
Don't say that.
Don't say Battlefield L.A.
It was funny, very funny, because on the Sci-Fi Channel, there was a movie called The Battle of Los Angeles.
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was Battle for L.A.
I think it was The Battle of Los Angeles, which was just fantastic. It was in Mega Shark territory.
That movie is by the same company that makes the Mega Shark, Mega Giant Octopus, and what is awesome about that company, I did a little research on them.
They made those films.
They purposely make those films, and they are shameless about it. So if you go to their website, on the website it says, "We make movies very similar to the movie, to the big budget movies that are out there. We purposely name them close to titles that are out there, because when you're going shopping on the thing, they're right next to each other. And we purposely make the cover box art similar to the big budget films, so that way they can get revenue." He is completely shameless about it, and that's what makes it awesome.
No, I don't know about that. I think the films speak for themselves.
They're awesomely bad, though.
Yeah, they're terrible. They're fantastically terrible. When you get into like the cunning, savvy, marketing savvy of some jerk who's trying to pass bad stuff off as good stuff, so you accidentally buy it instead of buying the actual movie that you want to buy. I sign off on that.
It's a genius promotion. It's like, hey, we have a warehouse with 14 of these things, with 14,000 of these things, and they're bad. How do we sell them? Tell everybody they're bad.
Yeah.
Tell everybody they're bad.
Ed Woods meets Max Bialystock.
Yeah, that's right.
We wrapped it all up with the first half of the show.
Yeah. Nicely done. So I just found out, I was under the impression that Charlie had seen the movie. So since Charlie didn't see the movie,
you can carry on.
We're going to keep the spoilers to a bare minimum this week.
No. I'm not like that.
To a bare minimum. We should always keep the spoilers.
Critique a show, you don't do that anyway.
It's a free form.
Unless Herman's here.
Just reveal everything. Just it all out.
I didn't like when they died at the end. And that was it.
Well, I guess I don't need to watch this.
Yes, right.
So, Hassan, you saw the movie, right?
I did see quite a bit of it.
All right. So, what did you think of the movie?
I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie. I thought it was entertaining. It doesn't break any grounds. Nothing new that you've ever seen, whether it's a war movie or a science fiction movie. But I thought the main characters were good. I liked Aaron Eckhart. And Michelle Rodriguez is always Michelle Rodriguez. She plays Michelle Rodriguez in... It's like one of those situations where they just... And then we'll drop Michelle Rodriguez in there and put her in a uniform. And everybody will, okay, it's Michelle Rodriguez. The subplots were pretty solid. And I found it interesting because it wasn't... It did contain itself to Los Angeles, so it wasn't like domination of Earth on a worldwide scale. Although a lot of that was implied, and I'm always interested in the modern telling of science fiction where the humans were at our level of technology, we're actually able to combat aliens, which is a brand new motif that was pretty much started with Independence Day, where the jets actually worked. Which is, I remember years ago going, wow, wait a minute, the jets are going to work? You know, you got missiles and that never works.
It's usually a nuclear bomb and that's it. That's all we got.
We got to nuke them. Try to nuke them.
Gotta remember, you could take out a spaceship that big but cannot take out Godzilla.
No. Yeah, I'm reminded, the guy who played the Brigadier on Doctor Who just passed away a couple of weeks ago. And I remember one scene I saw with him in it. He's after one of these usual one-sided battles against the alien what's-its. Says, just once I'd like to go up against an alien that wasn't immune to bullets.
It's true. It's ridiculous. Even in V, even in the original.
They had to steal.
They had to come up with these like special bullets to, and they had to steal the Visor guns in order to combat them. All right, fine. The fact that modern day Marines with modern day Marine tactics were able to at least hold their own to some extent with supposedly technically advanced interstellar societal types or interstellar creatures was interesting. I found it entertaining. I felt all right, and then it didn't really get to. I thought it was good that it didn't get in depth about what the invasion was really about. More like, we think they're after our resources, And that was it. That was the extent of it. And I'm not giving anything away by saying that. And it didn't really. I mean. This is kind of a spoiler. You don't really go onto the alien ships. You don't get into the mentality of the aliens.
The methods.
They don't show they don't show the aliens come up and then they slightly communicate with them and figure out what their their religion is and all that other stuff. It's just these guys are here. They're shooting at us. We shoot back at them until we can kill as many of them as possible.
Actually, stay true to the titles. That's why.
Yeah, it's just a battle in Los Angeles.
Which is great. That's
one small platoon that got stuck in the middle of this battle. That everything went pear-shaped for them and it didn't work out, and it was about them trying to get back out. That's the whole story.
Yeah.
I thought I was entertained by it. What about you, Mark?
What I find interesting about this movie is that we did a show just last week about open mind, fresh eyes, and nostalgia and all that stuff, and I'm sitting in the theater, I'm thinking, I saw this movie already. It was called Skyline. I felt that it was like Skyline Part 2.
Yeah, but this one was good.
I enjoyed Skyline.
You just made me cringe when you said that.
The problem. Then that's the problem that you had with the film, is that you saw a previous film that was very much like it, but you enjoyed it. But here's the thing. Skyline was terrible. While watching Ballet, I was like, well, this was what Skyline should have been. But Skyline had a fantastic poster.
That's the fantastic.
But that was about it, whereas Battle LA doesn't really have a fantastical poster, but it's a better film.
When I saw it previewed a while ago, I actually, my first impression was this is a Skyline sequel. That was my first impression.
And the thing is that, as we mentioned before, that the same special effects company who was hired to do Battle LA, went out and made their own movie, which was Skyline. So it's the same special effects. It's kind of the same feel. Yeah,
but the problem with that was they decided to write it and direct it, too. That was what the problem was. They should have just stuck to the special effects.
So, you know, you got to keep it simple. Here's the thing. That's my favorite. Here's the thing. But
here's
my thing, okay? When they got into the special psychological link that it had with people, and it zapped them and turned them into zombies and stuff. Right. Now you get into such fantasy fairy tale territory that it just drags me right out of the narrative. You know, like, look, if they have advanced weapons, they nuke stuff. They just come and destroy things as much as possible and take resources. That's from our conventional wisdom of how we operate. Going into other countries, we don't show up and start zapping people with weird lights to try to see which one of them is psychic or which one of them we have a bond with. And it just got ridiculous. And then the fact that, you know, anybody out there who hasn't seen Skyline, cover your ears right now. The fact that at the end the guy became a hero by wearing an alien body, it's like, come on. Horrible. Horrible.
Like I said.
The first ending was better.
Yes.
I would have had more respect for the film if they...
I would have tremendous respect for that film.
If they just rolled the freaking credits.
Yeah. I was like, and that's it. And yeah, you might be depressed, but 20 years from now, you'll say this was a really brilliant movie that, you know...
Groundbreaking.
Groundbreaking in many ways. The problem here is, Mark, it didn't end that way.
They jumped the shark, but I'm still saying, in general, I was sitting there like, wow, this is kind of like the same movie. I can see that this is happening in this part of L.A. while Skyline was happening in another part.
Sure, but...
Seeing the, you know, the very... very
one
similar,
part of L.A. was being attacked by crappy aliens, and the other part was...
Similarly designed aliens, I would say. That they, I kind of felt the same type of creatures on both movies. So I
it was actually
myself,
better than Independence Day, in my opinion.
I don't like Independence Day.
Yeah, well,
the
yeah,
more
good.
I watch that movie, the less I like
Yes,
Independence
that's...
Day.
Well, Independence Day does fall apart the more and more you watch it. Like I've said to other people, it's got more holes than the moon. So
I just, for some reason, I guess because I saw it too close together, I'm sitting there comparing the two movies, and I did enjoy Battle LA, and I really liked the Skyline also. I'm thinking, I wonder if I would have enjoyed it more.
Skyline. No, that's the problem.
I wonder if I would have enjoyed it more not seeing Skyline.
You know what? The yeah, maybe so. I'm pretty sure you would have. You would have probably been more profoundly impressed with it. The thing I liked about about the new one, Battle LA, is that it stayed focused on what was going on.
Battle
yeah, just,
LA.
Yes,
yeah.
There was a battle. These,
one, two, three,
we are fighting these
wasn't...
aliens. We're stuck here. We got to get out of here to get to here. Oh, we got stuck again because it's not that easy to get from one side of a devastated area to the other without getting detected or bombed or destroyed. And every time, every tragedy they ran into
made sense.
Were aliens,
right?
You know, it's like, oh, there's more of them, as opposed to something like Skyline, where it's like, and then they have internal fighting with each other, and they start punching each other, beating each other up, and one guy's like a weird pedophile rapist, and the other guy, it's like, really, right now, this is when you're in the mood now, right?
And then
with aliens.
You had the tough cliche guy.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, they didn't have to
get out of a building.
They didn't.
You shouldn't be in a building. You shouldn't be in a building. They got things that fly around and shooting people, you know, zapping people through windows. Get out of the building. Get under the ground.
Oh, they tried. The Battle of LA was a very straight to the point.
Straight to the point. No,
straight to the point. No fringe, no extra sparkly stuff. Just a very straightforward, this was going to happen, this is what we got to do.
And
we're done. That's it. There was nothing. We're done.
And they did a lot of stuff. They did a lot of the story arcs, the character development in the very beginning, so that it doesn't, you know, in the middle of a battle, you're not, you know, I think I shouldn't have told your sister I loved her and I apologize, but you know, none of that happened.
Well, what about I'm pregnant?
Like,
don't
really,
smoke.
Really, right now?
Aliens are firing bullets, lasers, nuclear arms in this area, but she said, don't smoke.
Yeah, you shouldn't smoke. Yeah, come on. Stop it. Stop it. Your movie's terrible. And your movie's terrible.
Actually,
your choice is
we
terrible.
We actually did a... I'm not choosing between one or the other.
You said you liked it more.
They were both good, but I like Skyline.
No, you chose Skyline. You like Skyline.
I like Skyline.
That's a choice in and of itself, and that was a terrible choice.
I like Battle of LA.
A terrible choice.
But as we did another show about beginnings and how certain movies, you have to pay attention to what's going on in the beginning.
Right.
This movie, I'm sitting there... I don't need to pay attention to what's going on. You know, whatever.
Why? Why would you do that?
It's just certain times that happens. I'm sitting there, and if you introduce like 30 characters.
I don't get you, people.
You introduce 30 characters at one time. Sometimes, like, you know what? I don't really care what's going on. When are we getting to the aliens?
That's what happened. That's why the movie experience goes wrong, because there's people like you out there who go, yeah, you know what? The information that whether or not you paid or not, you deliberately went into the theater and sat down to be fed a certain amount of information.
Right.
And then you, at whatever time of receiving what you asked for, which was you sat down and waited for it to begin, you decide to deny the very product that you had sat down and asked for. And then later you know, not you in general, but the royal you come out of the theater. Oh, that was crap. That didn't make any sense.
I'm not saying it wasn't crap. I'm not saying it didn't make any sense. I mean, it was a good movie.
There's these two morons coming out of...
I'm agreeing with you, Herman.
Coming out of Fellowship of the Ring. I'm just mad about that point in general. And there's one, the guy's telling the girl, I bet you there'll be a sequel. How do you just not even accidentally know enough about the Lord of the Rings, though it's a three-part book, and even if you don't know anything about the book, how do you not know that the guy made all three movies at the same time?
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of rock are you living under? Doesn't make any sense to me. I'm so sick and tired of people who don't know what the heck is going on.
Well, you know, I kill them. The thing is, I enjoyed the movie.
You did, your enjoyment of the movie is diminished because you liked another crap movie that came out before that. And that's the problem. Therein lies the problem.
I think I liked it less because of what came before. That's what I'm saying.
You didn't. Your enjoyment of it is diminished because of the crapped out before that.
Well, this is fun watching this. It's like I'm listening to it only in 3D.
I'm all right now. I'm going to stop.
That's right. We're going to go to the diner after this. some good stuff.
Will they have a milkshake?
So,
all right.
So despite my own personal shortcomings, it was still a good movie is what I'm trying to get at. I'm trying to get at
that
point.
Oh, why didn't you say that in the first place?
That's what I said. I'm trying to.
I'm kidding.
So, you know, it was
like watching me and Herman there for a while.
That's why I called him Herman.
Except for the very ending when R2 saved everybody. I can't stand that. R2 thing again. When Luke fires the proton torpedoes into the alien ship.
Terrible ending.
Oh, come on.
When they got the Macintosh and they hacked into the aliens.
They gave the aliens a virus.
Terrible. I can't even think there wasn't any problems with the movie. You know, it wasn't complicated enough to have a problem. That's what I'm saying. It's a very simple thing.
That's what Hassan's saying, because it stayed true to the title.
It
was a lot like Saving Private Ryan's in the same vein, very similar to it. Whereas these guys are one place, they need to get to the other place. The problem is the place in the middle of the two places from the beginning and the end is littered with the bad guys. And Private Ryan is of course a more sophisticated movie and a superior movie because it's done by a cinematic master. So let's not even debate that. But the movie in and of itself is kind of a classic because it's very simplistic. It's not complicated. You know, the battle sequences are complex and layered, but the basic plot is, okay, we gotta find that guy. And in order to find that guy, we got to kill a whole bunch of these guys without getting killed before we find that guy. And then when we find him, we got to get out of that place before we get killed by the guys we were killing to get in to find a guy that didn't get killed in the first place. And that's exactly what this movie was.
Yeah, from what I'm hearing, I gather that they made the Marines actually act like Marines and fight like Marines and, you know, not go... and not suddenly lose it at the wrong moment, but act like a well-trained Marine unit.
They remained in character. There was some tension between them because
it's
of
game
previous
game over, man. Game over.
Yeah. Well, yes, but that's another reason Aliens was so successful, because it's very simplistic. Right. It was a very simplistic thing. When you involve aliens in space travel stuff, you need to dumb down your plot, you know, a little bit, so that you could just get into what's the problem. How do we solve the problem? And what's wrong with your solution, you know, or carrying out your solution? There was beef between the Marines. It wasn't like they were all like,
they weren't happy,
John
friendly
Wayne,
together,
you know?
But
yeah,
it was addressed in the right way. They weren't in the middle of a fight. Like, yeah. By the way, you slept with my sister. I'm not going to protect
I'm
you.
I'm pregnant. Yeah.
Stop smoking. Yeah.
Now, to quote Star Trek, one of the Klingon commanders, only a fool fights in a burning house.
Exactly.
Character development was fine. Interaction was fine. I think it was, Skyline ruined this movie for me, despite the fact that I still liked it.
You see, if you want to make Skyline a decent or a sub-decent movie, just if you guys have the tape, just shut it off before they get into
when
the
when it fades to black, that's it.
Just as they get into the show. I would do that if I could edit the film.
The director's cut. Yeah. Right. Be like, this is a great movie. I can't believe it ended on such a downer. I can't believe they did that.
That would have been perfect. You would have gotten the Blu-ray or the I'm sorry for being too trendy. You would have gotten the DVD, right? Okay, VHS. You would have gotten you can't get the VHS. You have to.
I would have got the beta.
Format.
There you go. The beta.
No, it has to be this format because they could have the feature of deleted scenes or alternate endings.
Right.
If the ending of the theatrical version of Skyline was an alternate ending, yet the theatrical version was how we said it should have ended, it would have been a brilliant movie. And then I would have watched that and would have gone, I wonder if that would have worked. That other, no, it wouldn't have. This movie's good. Thank God they were smart enough to cut it out. But no, we want to make it a trilogy.
It's 10 more.
It's a trilogy. There's going to be 10 of them.
You know what it sort of reminded me of? Just very slightly, but when Spielberg had the good sense to leave the part out where Dreyfus goes into the ship.
In the original, yeah.
Right, and then a lot later
went back and
did it again.
Because he had money.
Yeah, he had money. He didn't care.
He some cash his way.
This sort of reminded me that a little.
You know what the thing is? I like that version of it because that's the version I saw when I was a kid, and I really wanted to see inside the spaceship. As an adult, I could see, that would kind of be.
But also,
the intrigue would be really cool, but I still kind of like
also
that.
Also, that's Spielberg doing it, opposed to special effects people.
Yeah, that's also. Yeah, I was like, I want it to look like this. No, yeah, exactly.
Because so, I'm sure he. No, never mind. I just think that movie.
I noticed that with the Animatrix, the animated movie came out for between the last two Matrix movies, and there's some brilliant stuff in it. The artwork is fantastical, but they need to stop letting programmers write, and people who do special effects can come up with wonderful visuals, but they don't really know how to justify the visuals correctly yet. And they need to take a couple of writing classes or hire a writer. I'm sure there's enough with this economy that are broken, destitute, and willing to write Skyline 2.
Again, as I always say, the independent filmmakers, the independent writers.
Yeah,
they're writing brilliant stuff.
Get one of them. He can use a pen name if he doesn't want to hurt his integrity.
Andre LaPlume.
Yeah, exactly. Alan Smithy.
So we got 2 minutes left. Do you want to give your final pitch? Should people out there watch this movie? Should they not watch
My final pitch is that Skyline stunk. And I don't know what's wrong with you.
But should they watch the LA?
I believe they should.
Okay.
And please don't unfriend me on Facebook when I suggest you should, like one of my friends did.
I think you should watch Belle LA in the theaters because it was a good experience, nice sound, good visuals. But if you've seen Skyline before, you got to take a step back before going in.
If you saw Skyline before, go in there knowing you were going to see a superior version of what Skyline should have been if it done by real directors.
So, Charlie, is that enough convincing for you to go see it?
Yeah, well, you know what convinced me to go see it? That it stays true to the title. I think if more movies did that, it would make, and made a lot of sense to people, then there would be a lot more hits out there.
Yeah. All right, there might be one scene in Toronto, which kind of slightly, I'm just kidding.
So, Tom, you're going to go see the movie based on what we said?
I certainly wouldn't mind seeing it. As a matter of fact, you've greatly intrigued me.
Now, there you go. So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio.
Really? It does?
Week. Yeah, that's it. We're done. Yeah. You miss any part of the show, you can go online to www.itcamefromradio.com and listen to an archives. It'll be up in a week. If you can't wait that long, you can go on places such as Podcast Planet and iTunes. You can download it. Oh, Charlie wants to say something.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone.
Yes, happy St. Patrick's Day, and we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.